It's just the nature of the connection with Great Britain. Now, beyond that, obviously, don't call and say, Nick, my Uncle Fred saw a light back in Ohio somewhere. Can you tell me what it was? Because obviously, he's not going to be able to. Here we have the man who ran the equivalent of Project Blue Book in Britain. So if you have something to ask about his career or about what he's encountered or, you know, something that would make sense to ask Nick, then please bring it on. We just gave the numbers, the portals to get in and be part of all this. It should be a very interesting hour. It all depends on the nature of your questions coming up. Once again, Nick Pope, and just before we go to the phones, Nick, I want to ask something. Most of our world is water, not land, right?
Sure.
Yeah. There have been all these reports, Nick, that we've sort of heard rumors about here in the U.S. about these fast walkers, these things that are tracked by, you know, national security agencies, whether it be from the ground or satellite, that actually they've seen many of these things traversing the atmosphere at like 25,000 miles an hour, the higher atmosphere. And I wonder what you've got from Britain on that sort of thing. Have you looked into any of that?
Well, certainly we've had all sorts of uncorrelated targets on the radar. And I was saying earlier about the mindset sometimes is that whether you're looking at a conventional air traffic control radar, whether you're looking at a military radar, or even if you're using, say, the Ballistic Missile Early Warning Center space tracking radar,
yes.
All sorts of strange things, as you say, do turn up. But if the mindset is that anything that moves incredibly fast must be a fireball, then it's the mindset that you really need to challenge. Yes, we do get these things, but until the training manuals say, don't assume, please don't assume that just because it goes that fast, it's a meteor or a fireball, until that change is made, we won't get any answers.
Huh. All right, let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Nick Pope. Hi.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Carmen near Cleveland in the great state of Ohio.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Pope, pardon me for being particularly inquisitive. It's a rare stage to ask a person of such stature in the establishment with the questions in the search for truth and clarity. But I make a couple assumptions here. I assume there are aspects of your distinguished career that, or your previous career, that you're not privy to freely discuss with the public.
I sort of asked him that. He said, well, Nick?
Yeah, that's entirely correct, yes.
Oh.
There are various things that I can't go into.
And
but there's nothing that's going to turn anything that I've said on its head.
Correct. There's no implication through that. I assume you were never briefed at any time during your tenure about the existence or even the possibility of the intelligence outside of our Earth through physical or tangible or communicative evidence?
No, I never had a briefing that said, we know these things are real. I never was shown any artifact and was told this came from a craft. Now, I did have a briefing where certainly some people in the Defense Intelligence staff spoke quite openly about the possibilities of these things being extraterrestrial, but they didn't. That briefing was not given from a point of view of we know. But it was more a speculative look, what else could it be with some of these things?
Well, you said there was somebody in your position previous to yourself, right?
Oh, yes. Dating back, there are many, many people have held the job.
Yes.
Dating right back to the 50s.
Is there somebody holding that job now?
There is, but the slightly, depending on your view, disheartening thing is that we have been a victim of our own openness, if I can say it that way.
You
I mentioned
can say
earlier
it that way.
Our Freedom of Information Act,
yes,
which only came fully into force just over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it won't surprise you to learn that in terms of the requests made under the Freedom of Information Act to the Ministry of Defense, requests for information about UFOs are right up there in about the top three, alongside things like the Iraq War and various other situations.
How about answers? I mean, what kind of answers are people getting?
People are getting documents. There has been a steady program of official disclosure, both at our national archives and indeed online at the Ministry of Defense's website, and an increasing number of UFO documents are now steadily being published.
All right, well, when these documents are requested here in America, we get an awful lot of redaction. You know, the big black stuff.
Yeah.
You get that over there?
The same rules apply, yes. Information can be redacted, but so far, the documents that have been released have pretty much been released in full. The decision seems to be either release or don't release. The sorts of things that are redacted are generally only the names of officials and indeed the names of the witnesses.
Oh, we got a lot more than that redacted.
Oh, yes. I've seen the sorts of documents that, again, researchers like Stan Friedman show around from the NSA. But generally speaking, there's a limited, very, very limited redaction in the British documents. But going back to the original question, what this has meant is that the section that is involved in the UFO phenomenon is now having to devote virtually all of its time to dealing with these FOI requests. And I do not believe that they are really even in the business of research and investigation of the phenomenon anymore.
Well, maybe the staff needed to answer these requests will grow larger than the staff looking into the problem.
I think that may well be the case, yes.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Nick Pope.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
This is Bob from Sherman Oaks, California, and I've been researching UFO phenomena for over 25 years. And a case I was going to tell you about, I'm actually a strong supporter in the government keeping UFO phenomena away from the general public, classifying it, because...
Because?
Because after what I've seen, it would turn our civilization upside down.
Well, why don't you enlarge on that a little bit, then? What do you mean it would turn civilization upside down? What have you seen?
Number one, I've worked with people... investigative community, and I've investigated this information on UFO phenomena for about 25 years, like I said.
Yeah, you said that already.
And
what have you seen that would turn civilization upside down?
The general population, the military, they have a lot of good thinkers. And the general population couldn't have the beginning ability to investigate the phenomena what's going on. What the surveillance we're under with these, you call them ETs or whatever, what have you, what's going on is beyond our comprehension, a lot of scientific areas, how they're getting here, how they're moving about.
Just do the best you can with words and try and answer that question, sir. What is it you have seen that would turn civilization upside down?
First of all, if the government were to tell people that there's another existence, be it a biological robot or extraterrestrial, that were conducting surveillance, monitoring us, doing medical research on us, cataloging us, manipulating our events of history, and doing things like securing military bases so they can't perform certain technologies that they're developing, interfering with cities and technologies and so on. But the main reason actually I called it was basically that in the early 50s, our scientists were investigating UFO phenomenon, and we did actually have one crash that we intentionally used. We figured out, our scientists, our physicists figured out how they were operating, and we used an oscillated microwave frequency to deorbit one of these things.
All right, to deorbit one of these things. Okay, well, who knows? Who knows? I mean, you get a call like that, Nick, and I don't know what you do with it.
Well, there's an old saying in the intelligence community, interesting if true. I think that's how I'd characterize that call. I can't evaluate.
I can't either. Yeah. But, you know, the first part of what he was saying was kind of interesting, and that was that, you know, there could be knowledge out there that simply couldn't be given to the general public. And if it was given to the general public, it would have such a horrible impact on all of our social structures that, you know, as he said, if we were being examined medically and sort of dissected every now and then and watched, we just couldn't.
Yes. I guess I'd agree with that. All I'd say is that I don't really have any information that would support that hypothesis. I mean, I agreed with what your caller said about there being some great thinkers in the military, but there are great thinkers in all sorts of other fields too. And I think it's arrogant to assume that only the military would have a take on this. I think the civilian scientific community would be able to contribute. And, you know, I come back to the point, I think if we had some of these technologies and had figured out how to use them,
yes.
I don't know why we'd be doing space shuttles and rockets anymore at all.
Nor do I. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Pope in Great Britain. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Art.
You're going to have to yell at us. You're not very loud.
Okay. Art, Nick, thank you very much for taking my call. Nick, I have a question to ask you about that large triangular craft you saw.
Yeah.
The one I saw was up in Franconia Notch, up in New Hampshire, back in 1994 in October. I was up there looking at the Milky Way. You can actually read a book up in Franconia Notch by the Milky Way. That's how bright it is. The stars are at night. And it was a totally, you know, cold, clear night. And this craft, it blotted out the stars. There were no running lights.
Mm-hmm.
It was easily 300 feet on the side, equilateral triangle, and it appeared to have some type of hemispheric dome on its belly. But the curious thing about this, and I really appreciate talking to somebody who's actually an official with some government about this, and you mentioned that you saw one.
And your question, sir, is?
My question is, did he notice any type of engines firing on this thing? I noticed nine, engines on the side of it, probably 100 feet across on the 300-foot side. And when these bright blue engines or whatever they are flashed, it took off like a bat out of hell. It was unbelievable.
Okay. Well, that's a new one. I haven't heard that described before.
Okay. Well, I should just clarify the situation. I haven't seen this thing myself. I think I was describing an RAF officer at a base called RAF Shawbury, and he was relaying this to me. And then, of course, Art, you were saying about your own
thing. Yeah, I take it you've never personally...
I've never seen a UFO myself, sadly, although I do live in hope. I think it's hugely unfair that all you guys have these fantastic sightings, and I got to run the government's UFO project, and I haven't seen one.
I wonder, Nick, if you had seen one and you had become public about it, whether you would still have the job.
Yes, I don't know. But, of course, I'm not doing that job now, so, you know, it would be interesting to see.
Do you think you could have, if you had seen something, for example, as that caller has seen and I have seen, at that, you know, that close so that you're really seeing it?
Yes.
Could you do the job then? From that point forward, could you really do the job?
I probably could not have done the job because I think I could only really do that job effectively if I was coming to each and every case really with an open mind and a blank sheet of paper. If I had believed in any of this or had seen something, I don't think I could have been even-handed in my investigations.
Very interesting.
And with great reluctance, because of course it was a fantastic job, I think if I'd have seen something, I would have had to have placed an official report
yes.
on the record.
Oh, absolutely.
To, ask one of my colleagues to investigate, and then I think I would have had to have asked for a transfer to other duties.
Well, it was
I would have been compromised.
It was not very many years, Nick, you know, after I started doing this kind of program that I had my sighting, and I struggled terribly with whether or not to make it public. And then when I finally did, I dragged my poor wife in front of the microphone as well and made her confirm everything that I was saying. But I, prior to that, I struggled with it terribly because I discussed this kind of subject matter, and I wasn't sure what it would do to me.
Sure.
And it has affected me. There's no way not to be affected. Once you've actually seen it close up, your life is never quite the same, ever.
That's certainly what I understand from my dealings with witnesses, but I'm conscious I haven't answered your caller's original question, which is about the lights and the potential engines, power source, or whatever.
Right.
Just to describe what was seen in this particular UFO sighting in 1993, and this is a description that I've heard before, is essentially people viewing this from almost directly underneath, and seeing an equilateral triangle, or in some cases a slightly more elongated triangle, and seeing three lights in each of the corners, and one larger but dimmer light in the middle. That's effectively the description that I received.
Wow.
And this craft was, again, just to go back to the point the caller made, I sort of talk about a flat triangle, almost like a, at risk of trivializing it, a slice of pizza or something, but that kind of shape. But
that definitely trivializes it a bit, because it was just monstrous and silent and amazing and
sure,
solid.
I'm just trying to really characterize a flat, something flat
no,
and triangular.
I've got it.
Some of the other descriptions did suggest at a little bit more height and depth. So there were some indications that we were dealing, in some of these cases at least, not with something flat and triangular, but something more diamond-shaped.
Right. Let me squeeze a call in. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Pope in Great Britain. Hello.
Hello, this is Roger from Washington State.
Yes, sir.
And 2 years ago, I think it was about 2 years ago, and I can't remember whether it was a magazine article. It seems to me that it was actually a newspaper article. I read that Israel was developing a craft with a light alloy exostructure, which would be filled with a helium or a lighter-than-air gas, and it would be parked in a geosynchronous orbit, suborbit, above their country. And I was wondering if Nick had maybe heard anything about anything like that.
I'm afraid the very short answer to that is I haven't.
Sorry. I know that I saw this article, and have you ever heard anything like that, Art?
No, and it was going to be parked where?
The structure would be filled with this gas, and so that it would be lighter than, basically not lighter than air, but it would be easy to elevate up to a suborbit.
You know, tomorrow night's going to be really interesting. James McCanney's going to be here. He's a physicist, and he's had decades in promoting, among other things, and we're going to talk about many things, his view of what comets are, not the dirty snowballs that NASA has been always saying they thought they were, knew they were, really. And now Project Stardust is done. We have obtained material from a comet tail. We have it back. We've analyzed it. And so it's going to be a hell of a night to have McCanney on the air, and that'll be tomorrow night. Tonight, Nick Pope in Great Britain, and Nick, welcome back.
Hello, yeah.
The caller, you're also back. I cut you off, so anything else?
Well, no, huh? I've always thought that would be a logical type of craft to develop, you know, something with a lighter than air gas in it. And I can't remember if it was an article, but I've always watched for some follow-up on that article, and I've never seen anything.
No, I must admit, I haven't either. And so, Nick, he's right in a way. I don't know that it would go to the kind of altitudes he was talking about, geosynchronous, but certainly some kind of, we didn't really abandon the whole project after the Hindenburg, right?
No, that's correct. And certainly I've seen some more generic material about airship technology and such like, but I guess a bit of Googling may well be the answer to this one.
There you have it. International Line, good morning. You're on the air with Nick Pope.
Good morning.
Hi.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, Art. I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller from Winnipeg, Canada.
Yes, sir.
Listening on the Superstation, CJOB, and we're glad to have it. Just a question for your guest. Basically, I'm like Art has mentioned. I've spotted a couple of UFOs up here in Canada. I spent a good deal of time up north, and I saw a documentary a number of months ago for the second or third time on orbs that you have a tremendous amount of crop circles over in the UK. And there was a number of amateur, I would imagine them to be amateur photographers up on a hillside. They had a beautiful view of the valley and this huge cornfield, I guess it was, perhaps.
I'll bet Nick has seen the video, haven't you, Nick?
I'll bet she has.
Now, is this, there are two videos that people often mention. One is where you actually see a formation appear. And I think most of the reports that I've heard suggest that that is a fake. But the one, do you mean the one with the little ball of light moving quite fast and very low through the fields and then coming close to a tractor? Is that
the
one?
Absolutely. That is the one I had in
mind. That's the one.
Yes. Now, that is an intriguing piece of film footage, not least because I believe that Colin Andrews subsequently tracked down the driver of the tractor, who quite independently from the people taking the film was able to corroborate the story.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm virtually certain that's something that Colin and Colin Andrews has published. Yes, that is an extremely intriguing piece of film footage. I've seen it. Of course, it was never sent to me at the Ministry of Defence. I can't recall quite when it was taken, so it's not a piece of footage that I was able to get any experts to look at, analyze,
and Nick, maybe I should ask you, did your agency, your no-named agency, investigate crop circles, mutilations, that kind of thing?
We had a watching brief, certainly on crop circles. I think the best way I can answer your question is to say that certainly, in my experience, it was impossible to run a UFO project without finding yourself on the receiving end of any reports that don't really kind of fit the pattern. So crop circles, animal mutilations, ghosts seen on military bases, alien abductions, anything weird and wonderful was reported to me. I had people phone up and ask if they could remote view for their country and become psychic spies. I had people ask me what plans the Ministry of Defense was developing to develop technologies to engage rogue comets or asteroids on collision course with the Earth. So, yeah, the UFO project, although its terms of reference didn't cover these things, inevitably the reports had to go somewhere, and they came to us.
Do you have any comment at all? I mean, since you're a Brit, Britain seems to attract crop circles like iron filings to a magnet, Nick. Why is that?
Well, I'm going to say something which probably won't be too popular with some of your listeners, but I think that most, if not all, of the complex patterns, I believe, are probably made by people.
No, that's all right.
But I think that there is a genuine phenomenon in terms of the very simple circles, and that, you know, it hasn't gone away. It's just that it's not being reported when there are all these much more newsworthy crop circles which make much better pictures in the newspapers. And I think the answer there, frankly, is likely to be some form of meteorological phenomenon. But I don't buy into the theory that these are being caused by UFOs, either landing in some way and swirling these patterns or creating them with some sort of directed energy weapon. I just haven't seen anything that would support that hypothesis.
Well, maybe you could explain to us how these intricate, amazing formations get done over acres and acres and acres of land without people getting caught and that sort of thing. We all wonder about that.
I think the first point is to stress that although people have this image of Doug and Dave as being the kind of archetypal
crop circle hoaxers,
I think that firstly the answer is there are much larger teams of people out, so there's just more less work for the individuals to do, and everyone has their little piece to do. The other answer to your question, and I'm going to have to choose my words extremely carefully here for legal reasons and not mention any names, is that, of course, some farmers might find it quite lucrative to have a pattern on their crop.
No.
Because the value of the lost and trampled corn pales into insignificance when you add up the fact that once word gets around, as long as you put a couple of people at the gate and take a pound of time for someone to come in and lurk, over the course of a long summer's weekend, certain farmers could stand to make several thousand pounds because the interest, of course, is that big. So, again, choosing my words carefully, the issue about not being discovered and things like that, well, they might have some inside help or even inside sponsorship to produce these patterns.
Well, I mean, you've certainly seen them. Some of them are gigantic, complex beyond all reason for a bunch of kids with boards or whatever.
Well, I think it's more sophisticated than that.
Oh, it must be.
I suspect people are doing computer programs. I suspect there are artists and designers engaged on this.
Let's say that I buy all of that. Shouldn't we have by now caught some people or had some people come up and admit they were part of a very complex scheme and then laid out for us how they've done it? Because looking at some of them, it just doesn't seem humanly possible, particularly for them to have formed in such relatively short periods of time. There is a legitimate, perhaps criminal mystery here.
Yes. Two answers to your question. Firstly, at least one person has been caught making crop circles and was actually charged and convicted of criminal damage.
Good.
The second answer is as to why the people engaged in really complex patterns wouldn't come out and say so. I think it would be like killing the goose that laid the golden egg. Part of their motivation is to keep the mystery going.
Well, they're doing a damn good job of it, for the most part.
They are. I think of these formations as being art. And in a sense, I think to understand it, one has to look at the mindset of the conceptual artist, where for a conceptual artist, the effect of the artwork on the population is as much part of what they're creating as the pattern itself. And part of the conceptual art is, I think, getting these things in the papers, getting them discussed at at news conferences, UFO conferences, and wherever. Now, I know there's a very deep-held belief in the minds of many people that there's more to it than that. And
I know I'll
have just upset a big bunch of people, and I apologize for that.
No, it's quite all right.
I can't not tell you what I think, and that's what I think.
Okay, well, I'm willing to follow that path with you, but it just seems the size and the quickness with which some of these are laid down, and then, of course, you mentioned the lights, right, that were captured on video. I mean, there is something, I'm sure that a lot of it is, I don't know, physics students maybe out having a blast at night, a lot of them, or something, but not all of them. And
well, I guess the last point that I would make on that is that, of course, I might be wrong, and I keep an open mind.
Well, again, they're doing a good job. First time caller line, you're on the air with Nick Pope. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm interested to know what information you can share with us of Mr. Bell's audience about UFOs in regard to either war games or other sites of battle, say in the Falkland Islands or in the Middle East or wherever, and I'll be glad to take your comments off the air.
Okay. War gaming. Has there been any interference or any observation made at war games?
Not as no. Hang on. Let me correct that. Yes. Of course, there's been a long history of close association between UFO sightings and military bases. In terms of military exercises, yes, I guess the story of Operation Mainbrace in the 50s is fairly well known, that UFOs were detected in a big NATO exercise. And I'm aware of a case more recently involving a British Navy ship, HMS Manchester, which was again on a NATO exercise up, I think, with the Norwegians and some other nations on what called a JMC, a Joint Maritime Course, the regular naval exercise that NATO does. And again, there were sightings of UFOs there. As to any interference, I'm not aware of that. And as for an actual war zone, of course, I've seen reports in the literature, but I haven't seen any official reports relating to Iraq or the Falklands or anything like that. I mean, I guess the point I would make is, of course, there are an awful lot of things flying around, everything from aircraft to missiles, AAA. So there's a lot of things in the sky anyway.
All right, good enough. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Nick Pope. Good morning.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Jim in Baltimore.
Yes, sir.
I think we all made some interesting inferences about that exchange that your government had with the U.S.
Yes.
Concerning. I was wondering if you had any other examples of that. I think the last caller might have diluted this question a bit, but, the proximity you have with other European nations, I was wondering if you had any other examples such as that.
No, there are very few examples. My brief when I was doing the job was really just to look at sightings in the United Kingdom. Inevitably, I did try to make some contacts a little bit wider. And, for example, where we got questions, as we did still, about the Belgian sightings.
When you say brief, Nick, you mean your orders, your directive? Is that what you mean?
Yes, effectively the terms of reference of the project, which is just to look at UFO sightings reported to me in the UK to see if there was evidence of a threat. My brief did not say go and start investigating UFO reports that you might have read occurred in China or anything like that.
At any time, to your knowledge, with the man who had the job previous to you and or the ones subsequent, has there been an assessment of threat?
Not a formal one, no. Not in the sense that a military intelligence officer would understand the concept of threat assessment. Now, that doesn't mean that people haven't speculated more informally over the years, and I think I mentioned some fairly big establishment figures who did, and in fact, someone who I didn't mention, Lord Hill Norton, the former chief of our defense staff, coming out and speaking about his belief in an extraterrestrial reality. Now, the chief of the defense staff, that's kind of the equivalent of your chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Yeah, it's big.
Or rather, a former chairman, someone like Colin Powell, suddenly coming out and talking about an extraterrestrial reality.
That's big.
When people of that caliber speak out, I think people should listen.
I agree. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Nick Pope. Good morning.
Yes. Am I on the air?
You are.
Yes, going back a couple of calls, I wanted a comment on the crop circles. I think you perceive a substance to them, Art, because, say, the Tibetans, they make very intricate, they call them mandala symbols, and a mandala symbolism is a reflection, a psychic reflection of a person's mind. And these Tibetans, they meditate on these.
Okay, we're very short on time. So your point is, your question?
That was just a comment that that's what you might be saying. My actual question is it's not, are these people hallucinating, but it is, what is the psychological aspect to this entire subject of seeing UFOs? Because certainly there's got to be a
portion of it. Yeah, I think we've got it. All right, so how much of it is, I don't know, can be attributed to some sort of psychological maladjustment on the part of the people claiming these stories?
I think a very small percentage, but it would be irresponsible to pretend that it wasn't there. And I think one could say the same of the abduction reports, that certainly there may well be psychological explanations to some, but not all of those points. Picking up on your caller's first point, there's some very interesting potential research to be done, I guess, between linkages in crop circle patterns, symbols seen by people on the side of UFOs, and some of the symbols reported by the abductees. And again, there's a whole symbology, as it were, a science of symbology, and some of the ancient patterns drawn.
The title of your book is a good way to wrap it up. The title of your book is Open Skies, Closed Minds. Open Skies, Closed Minds. I love the title. Buddy, we're out of time.
Okay, well, it's been great to be on the show.
It's been great to have you on the program, and you can bet we're going to have you on again. Nick, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Have a good night. It ends that quickly, folks.